This is the Green Divas Radio Show. Host Green Diva Meg, co-host Green Diva Jen, and Green Dude Scott explore fun and low-stress ways to live in a deeper shade of green, laugh a little, and learn about useful resources for practical eco-living. Now, welcome the stars of our show, the Green Divas and Green Dude Scott.
And the crowd goes wild.
Don't you love that crowd? Yay! Really, I had to leave them on for a minute.
Can we extend that?
That is so fun. I just love that, Ivan. Thank you. Well, you're here on the Green Divas Radio Hour. Welcome. If you were listening a little bit beforehand, I got the opportunity to play some Green Diva tunes.
Jamming out. It was good stuff.
It was fun. Good chick music, man.
Yeah, well.
So it's...
It was good. It was very good.
So I'm Green Diva Meg, and
Green Dude Scott.
With Green Dude Scott. And we have a kind of sad announcement tonight. I kind of let folks on our fan page of Facebook know that we had some news. And Jennifer, Green Diva Jen, one of the original Green Divas, founding Green Divas, she's moving on from the show for a while. She's got other things to focus on, and we really, really appreciate everything she's done.
Yeah, we're going to miss her. And I still hope that she can drop in on us.
Yes,
occasionally.
I begged her to please leave that door open, and of course she will. And so we wish her well, her and her
Very
family,
so.
And thank her for her fantastic service. And it it really is, volunteer at this point, so she did a lot. God bless us, everyone. Anyway, so, right, for now, you're going to have Green Diva Meg and Green Dude Scott. We've got
Lots
Silent Green Diva Jesse. And what we have is, we've started, with this stable, if you will. Maybe not the right word. I was saying that we have a group of Green Diva correspondents that are starting to call in for, short segments in early part of the show to tell us what's going on in each region. And so... Tonight, we're going to hear from Green Diva Heather
in
D.C. And she's Dr. Heather Eves.
Yes.
Really. But she's going to be a Green Diva for us tonight. And hopefully she'll call in regularly because, there's a lot going on in the D.C. area. A lot of stuff she's involved with.
Oh, right. Absolutely. With Heather. She's a very, very busy diva.
I think it's part of her career and her lifestyle. So we're going to hear from her tonight just briefly about what's going on in her area, what she's doing. And then we have a really fun interview with a guy who calls himself the Dark Ranger.
Yeah.
How about it?
Well, he's getting attention for his cause.
Well, he's all about light pollution, which I thought, oh, my God, come on, another type of pollution thing to worry about, right?
Well, he's going to tell us why it's a big issue.
Well,
and it is.
From what we learned last week talking to Jessica Aranella of the web series What You Can Do, she talked about, and that's how we found him. I was astonished to think about the ramifications of light pollution, but we're going to hear more about that. And if you have any questions, you can...
I am
us. You can go to our Facebook fan page and write us a note.
Yeah, chat us up.
We like to interact, man. We're interactive dudes and divas. So, anyway, that's sort of the announcement part, right? Did I get through like the business?
Oh, well, the business is never ending. There's so much going on. It's amazing.
Well, there's the business and then there's the BS, right?
Oh, we have a lot of BS.
I think
also.
We're on to the BS part. I was reading the other thing about Poe. He's the avenger and advocate for light pollution and climate change. Well, we'll talk to him. So, what kind of newsy tidbits do you have?
Oh, newsy. Well, what about that storm the other day? Night before last.
Oh, what?
Goodness.
The wind?
The wind? We had lightning and thunder. You must have lost your power, right?
No. Remarkably enough, we don't. Really lose our power very often. Mountain Lakes does, where you used to work.
Yeah.
Us like country bumpkins in Booton Township. What's Jesse saying? Okay. I don't know. We got to turn on her microphone over there, man. Silent
just
Jesse.
Just sneak it on there.
Well, you came up with a news story today that we put on the Facebook page. The one that the White House is supporting an initiative to put salad bars
in 5,000 school cafeterias.
Schools. Right. I think that is awesome.
Well, it's great because, I mean, you know, most people would agree that they enjoy a salad bar because
if
the variety's there, they can pick and choose, and it's just one way to get healthy food into our kids, which is very difficult. I mean, you're still getting French fries and pizza in a lot of schools for lunch, and that's ridiculous.
Right. Where ketchup is considered a vegetable.
Now, it is getting resistance, unfortunately.
Well, I think there are logistical issues that I read about having to do with, having to do with health code issues, you know, how to keep everything, you know, clean and sanitary and all that fun stuff, because there's a lot of little hands on everything, I guess. I don't know. The other thing that I saw, I got an email from somebody about this GMO issue, which really, you know, these statistics are kind of upsetting. You know, we all kind of, GMO stands for genetically modified. And it's always been something.
We need to do a whole show on this.
Controversial. 75% of all processed food contains genetically modified products. Oh, my Lord, that's a lot.
7/10.
So, you know, and a lot of that's corn. 91% of that is corn. And if you watch
corn is used in so much, right?
Yeah, well, and that's because of the farm subsidy. I mean, there's so much... you know, there's so many things involved with the farm bill and the subsidies and this. You know, let's make everything out of corn now because, you know.
Again, we'd have to. This is a big subject because we have to go into why things are modified, why they've modified these products. And first of all, you should avoid eating processed foods in the first place. If you listen to the show, you know that. Yeah. Eat locally, eat fresh foods. And you'll avoid all this terrible stuff.
Sadly, you can't avoid it all because some of the GMO seeds are kind of out there, and farmers get cross-pollinated and all that groovy stuff. I think by and large, if you're buying local and fresh, then...
Well, you're avoiding much of it. And of course, if you learn to grow your own, that'll help too.
Yeah, learn to grow your own. Right, don't be like me, the black thumb of, you know... Oh, my God. Hey, you didn't bring any apples.
No, we had a bad year of apples, and of course, I don't treat my apples, so I get what nature gives me.
You get what nature gives you. Ah, Dr. Green Diva Heather's on. I don't know.
A 10-minute title there.
What do I call her? Yeah, well, she's a little bit of everything. So.
She is a little bit of everything.
Isn't she cool?
Yeah.
All right, let me see if I can get her on the line here. Green Diva Heather, you're on the line.
Thank you. Hello.
How are you?
Fantastic. How are you?
I'm great. And you got Green Dude Scott here, too.
Hi, dear. How are you?
How are you since the bike ride?
Oh, wonderful. I was on another one today.
So
not 100 miles, though.
So was I. Had to commute to work.
Oh, we have to talk about that. But I just wanted to talk for a minute about you. You're Dr. Heather Eaves, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And... I know you and Scott, you know, we all kind of know each other from way back when.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say when, because we're all like 30-something.
Sure.
And but you and Scott do some biking together, cycling.
That's correct. He's one of my inspirations, yep.
And just tell us for a minute about the type of work that you do.
Technically, I'm a wildlife conservationist, specifically in Africa. And so I've done a bunch of different things as a wildlife conservationist, most currently teaching graduate school here in D.C. Metro.
Really? Where?
I teach at Virginia Tech, has a Falls Church campus with a natural resources program.
Good old Falls Church. That's where my brother used to live.
See, and then, so that's a 6.3-mile bike ride from my house. And then I teach at Johns Hopkins SAIS, which is the School of Advanced International Studies.
In Maryland?
No, it's a international studies graduate program in D.C. that's been there since the early 1940s.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's an economics it's a school for folks going to school to study economics and international development, and they have a program within that that focuses on energy and the environment.
Oh, you know, we just, we have so much we can talk to you just about what you're doing.
How about that, huh?
I think we have to schedule you for like a full interview soon.
But the bike ride there is about eight and a half miles to DuPont Circle.
So yep. Good old DuPont Circle.
Getting us back to the bike thing. So I cycle to work.
I love that. So what, you know, I've asked Green Diva Dr. Heather to do is just be one, our Green Diva eyes in the world down in D.C. And just give us a little shot of what's going on down in your area.
Mm-hmm.
So there you
and
go.
And I connect because I went to high school in New Jersey. Is that how this connects?
Well, there's that.
There's that.
There's that. But we have listeners all over the world. We have 85 countries that have logged into our website.
Fantastic.
I'm not saying there were like 20 people from Sri Lanka, but, you know.
Well, I tell you, I when I bike around here today on my 20-mile ride, not a single car. Now, I don't think Heather enjoys that kind of freedom.
Nope.
So city biking and, of course, commuting biking is much more, much different. And, of course, New York City, it's a constant battle between bike lanes and traffic lanes.
Trying not to get... Well, DuPont Circle can't be that much more fun. I remember driving in D.C. But let's let Heather tell us what, you know, what her focus is tonight. There was a couple of items, and I never really told her, you know, I'm going to let her pick what she wants to tell us about tonight.
I'm happy to stick with the biking, you know, just so folks know that definitely there's the option for city riding. I have many folks that we ride with down here that much prefer the trails, and there are a lot of trails in this area. So, for example, biking to Falls Church from my house is a bike trail from my house all the way to Falls Church with the exception of the last half mile.
Wow.
See,
yep. I don't think we can get that around
no.
here.
No, we don't. Like at my house particularly, if I walk outside my house, I get run over. There's no sidewalk. There's no sidewalk.
Shoulder.
There's no shoulder. There's nothing.
Right. So we bought a house in a neighborhood that's on a corridor park on purpose because it was on this park that was attached to this bike trail, and the bike trail is same distance or same situation for my husband who is 3 miles from his office and has biked that for much of the last 10 years.
So you will bike into DuPont Circle also?
Yep.
And how does D.C. handle cyclists?
I find D.C. very bike-friendly. I have had a lot of hours in D.C. on the bike, and the cars and the taxis and the buses all are very familiar. There are a lot of bicyclists in D.C., and I have you have to follow the rules. You have to follow the rules of the road, and
of course,
just like a car. And if you do that, you tend to be do okay.
Know your hand signals, right?
Know the hand signals, but also have lots of lights.
Yeah,
lots of lights, reflective gear, that kind of thing.
Now, is there any website or anything for the Washington D.C. metro area that lets you know that bikers can cyclists can go to maybe find where the best cycle paths are?
Sure, there's loads of places you can go online. There's the Washington Area Bike Association, WABA, runs all kinds of events and provides all kinds of information and maps for bike trails and bike paths and good routes to take. And there's a loop that we do called the Arlington Triangle that is pretty much all bike paths. It does somewhat look like a shape if a triangle around Arlington County, which is that southern tip of Washington, D.C., across the Potomac.
Right.
But you can actually bike across. At one point, you can pick up a bridge across the Potomac and then bike around a park called Haynes Point.
Now,
and do a 23-mile loop on a Saturday morning.
Now, there are several bridges into D.C. Are they all cycle-friendly?
I have cycled over Key Bridge, 14th Street Bridge, Roosevelt. I think I have cycled over all of them at this point.
Okay, good to know. Scotty, you had a question?
Well, I was remarking on the fact that we really don't enjoy that up here in the local cities up here.
Well, that's because our suburbia is really car friendly. I mean, it's sad,
sure.
But that's really, you know, it's very challenging. Now, here's a question: as a commuter cyclist, you must have times when it's either bad weather, maybe it's too hot. I don't know. But do you get kind of nasty, sweaty? Do you have to deal with a lot of hills and like take a shower when you get to the office?
Yes, I have some techniques that I follow depending on the season, but definitely during the summer and early fall months, I would carry a change of clothes.
Right.
And you can easily kind of take a quick clean up, if you will.
Yep.
Before you go into work, so I would bike in, and then I would allow a little bit of time before going to teach my classes. And,
well, I mean, that's just one of those practical things that I've thought about. Like, well, gee, I wouldn't mind, but, you know, really, do I have, you know, can I do that? And
you need to make time.
What I find is it forces you to slow your life, simplify your life, and slow your life down.
Yeah.
So that. You make time for it. People
right.
often say they just don't have the time, and I can fully appreciate that because biking, I think I put about 3,000 miles on my bike in the last 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it is really challenging to find the time sometimes, but it's like anything else in your life. If you turn it into this is a given, I'm committed to Mondays and Thursdays biking to work or just one day a week or whatever it is, then it just becomes part of your routine, and you work around it, and you work out all the little kinks and stuff. And people are very appreciative of the fact that it's hard to go in and teach graduate courses in wildlife conservation and global issues and natural resources if I'm driving a six-passenger minivan 6 miles.
Well, there's that.
And feel authentic, you know?
Yeah,
pretty hard to... So in the bad weather and the cold weather, like anything else, people ski in the kind of weather that people don't want to bike in, but you can, if you have the right gear, you can do it.
Right.
What do you mean, cross-country ski to work?
No, I mean, you know, certain conditions, icy conditions probably are not recommended, but I'm saying even if it rains, you put on rain gear.
Got it.
And you can bicycle and it's not...
Yeah, it's not that bad. It really isn't.
Both of you are quite an inspiration with the cycling thing. Heather, I see you on Facebook, and I'm always so impressed with all that you're doing. And she has kids, so kids and animals, and, you know, like the rest of us, but she's really doing it. So, Heather, I hope you will, you know, kind of make this a regular thing, and we'll get it scheduled so it's not too challenging. But I also want to schedule a full interview to really talk about the work you're doing.
Thank you so much, and I just, you know, reiterate that Scott... in his rides that he does every year from Jersey down to D.C., definitely got me thinking a few years ago that, you know what, this would be a really great thing to pick up, and so I have to thank you, Scott, for
wow.
Yeah, see? I do get to bike through D.C., but I get to shut down streets when I go through. Motor escorts
so cool.
And everything, sirens going.
But then we finally decided we had to do a ride together, so we got to do the Seagull Century in October.
Really, someday you'll get me back on a bike. Mine got stolen, and it's a lame excuse, but I'm getting there. I'm getting back there.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure.
All right, Heather.
And I'll continue to listen in on what you guys are doing.
Good. Yeah, we got the Dark Ranger coming. That ought to be
Dark
interesting.
Ranger.
Fantastic. I can't wait to hear what that's about. Take care, y'all.
Thanks, Heather.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that was good.
Oh, I'm telling you. She could fill hours and hours of radio with her knowledge.
And her experience.
Yeah.
And she's the real deal. Makes me feel kind of like poo because I'm still driving.
Well, you know, the Eves family has been very supportive of this program.
Oh, my gosh. James is like one of our best listeners.
Yes.
So, anyway, really just wonderful stuff. And it's really so exciting to hear someone that you grew up with and, you know, that you. I haven't been in touch with her for many years. So it's, you know, that Facebook thing, which is... just amazing, the people that you reconnect
people.
With
sure.
And what they're doing. I've been pretty inspired by most of it. You know, there's an occasional sixth grade antic that'll go on. I'm like, oh, come on. You know, I can't deal with that.
Well, there's definitely some etiquette that needs to take place on there.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to remind everybody that they can find out more about us from thegreendivas.com. www.greendivamag.com. And we also now have an archive page. So this show will be on the archive page tomorrow, thanks to Ivan, who's doing a wonderful job recording and helping us post these things. And then, of course, we have our Facebook fan page, Green Divas Radio. Just look us up on Facebook and like us, because, you know, our self-esteems need it. And there's always, you can find me on Twitter, Green Diva Meg. And Scotty, we got to get you going, right? Hello?
I think I had one, but, you know.
Okay.
I can't do it all. I mean, I know. Hardly have
He's
time
whining.
For Facebook.
He's whining.
Yeah, well, I'm tractoring.
So, I'm thinking, let's listen to a couple of tunes. I've got some good tunes for this show. Since I was doing all chicks on the last hour, tonight's music is a couple of guys.
Oh, yeah?
Couple of good guys. Let's see.
So what do you got?
Drive-By Truckers, because, you know, I got a little testosterone going there. And Daniel Lenoir.
Who?
Daniel Lenoir. Canadian boy.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, he's awesome.
Well, Johnny Cash.
He's
done, nice, but
okay. Just
we'll talk about that off here.
Just listen.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Now, more of the Green Diva and our green dude, Sky.
More of me, yes.
Isn't that fun?
It is. What do you, I didn't see it. Yes.
Yeah. Jessie's waving our little, you know, prompt things. She's trying to do a good job. Anyway, welcome back to the show, Green Diva Meg.
And Green Dude Scott. We have a full house tonight.
We do. We have Mike and Mary. Come on, Mary, say hi.
Hi, say everybody.
There you go.
No.
Little voice.
Hello, everybody.
The microphone. Come on, little voice in the microphone.
No.
Say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you. Otherwise, it just sounds kind of lame in the background there. Can you hear me now? So, anyway, that was, I was mistaken. That was not Daniel Lenoir, but that's Daniel Lenoir's song. That was, of course, Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds. And I love that version. It's a live version because I have seen him perform it from like 10 feet away back when we Green Divas were very cool and sponsored Farm Aid. Those were the days. And before that, of course, we had Daddy's Little Pumpkin from, Drive-By Truckers. Drive-By Truckers. Cool. Anyway, yeah, so much distraction tonight, man.
Well, let's talk about our next caller.
Oh, the Dark Ranger. Yeah,
the Dark Ranger.
Calling in a couple minutes.
It's a very interesting site that he has, website that he has.
Okay, which is, let me post it up here before we even get him on the phone.
Now, with the holidays coming up, everyone's going to light up all their decorations outside their house.
What's the URL for his website?
Well, let me shuffle my papers over here and find out.
Stop it. I thought you were just about to talk about it.
I am thedarkranger.com, all one word. I am the Dark Ranger, which is very interesting site.
It's kind of, and he has, when you go there, there's like a Star Wars logo thing that says
yes.
Dark Wars. Very cool. Okay, so yeah, well, he's gonna be on in a minute, so let's not,
there
go.
He is.
There you go.
So he's listening.
He's listening.
Oh, and of course, well, you have to look through the site, but he's a park ranger.
Yeah, out in where, Arizona? Well, let's ask him, huh?
Yeah. Bryce Canyon National Park.
Yeah, I think
there we
Bryce
go.
Canyon is
Boy,
Arizona.
Way to keep up with the show.
Man.
Ugh.
Can you hear me okay?
We can. Hello, Ken, also known as the Dark Ranger.
Kevin
Poe. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of chatting about you. Your ears were burning. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, I heard. I've been listening to the show.
Oh, good. Good. That's comforting. Now we know at least one person is listening.
So my wife and stepdaughter are here too, so we got three listeners for sure.
Awesome.
In the Las Vegas area.
Las Vegas. Okay. So Bryce.
Yeah, I've come to the very hell of light pollution itself.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
So what are you doing there?
Well, I'm here for a conference as part of the National Association for Interpretation. It's kind of a
a conference of park rangers where we share ideas about different kinds of issues, and I'm here to talk about global climate change.
Awesome. Now, but at Bryce Canyon, is that Arizona? Is that where you usually are?
It's southern Utah, almost in Arizona, but not quite. But yeah, that's my home base.
Wow. And you're a real park ranger.
Huh?
Wow. I always just think whenever I hear park ranger, I think, you know, Yogi Bear. I can't help it.
That's an actual very cool job. I mean, to get to you know, work these parks that are all over the country.
Well, yeah. So talk to us a little bit about how you got inspired and interested in sort of advocating and educating and helping people become aware of light pollution and what that is.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really lucky is that my father was a park ranger for 40 years, recently retired. So I got to grow up in a lot of really wild places where there's still fantastic, beautiful night skies.
Wow, literally.
And and in these national parks. And then as I went into civilization, my college years and stuff, I realized that this is not something everybody can enjoy and that it's something that we're losing. And I use the word light pollution helps evil. That's my little mnemonic you can find there on the a website, and a lot of people think, come on, now, that's an overstatement. No self-respecting person throws down the word evil. But it really is a very malignant kind of thing. You know, people think one little light here doesn't matter, and 100 lights isn't much more than one, and 1,000 lights isn't much more than 100. And pretty soon you have a problem that is subtle because it's something that's grown so slowly in the last 50, 60 years that people don't recognize it as a problem.
Wow.
And so then this crusade that myself and a bunch of my Dark Ranger colleagues have got involved with is to try to heighten people's awareness to the evils of light pollution, all the detrimental effects that excess light creates, and how we can find win-win situations where we can, you know, get the light we need to be safe and to be able to do what we need to do, but not wreck the beauty of the night sky, not create ecological havoc and all these other things.
So give us a short list of some of the detrimental things that light pollution does.
Yeah, one of the ones that that first drew me to the study was, you know, the whole beauty of the night sky. One of the things that people like to do in national parks is to, you know, go out in the wilderness and lay down underneath the beauty of the night sky and just contemplate life's little questions and the big questions in the universe that we all share. And it's a very peaceful experience, and I think it helps people, you know, really relax and explore and take time out from their busy schedule and you know, just kind of be. So that's part of it. You know, it's the beauty, the aesthetics of a pristine night sky. But there's other much more practical things. You know, jaded people would hear that and go, oh, you know, who cares about that? That just sounds like nonsense. But not your listeners, of course, other people I'm talking about. But, you know, we are quite concerned about the ecological impacts on various kinds of wildlife. Most of the animals that people travel to national parks to enjoy, whether it's the grizzly bears or the bison or the little adorable things, you know, like owls, all these animals we know and love are mostly nocturnal. Owls, of course, but even deer, elk, moose, these kinds of animals do most of their activity in the twilight or even the nighttime hours. And as we add lots of artificial light to their world, we throw off their balance and their circadian rhythms.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
I was going to say their melatonin gets screwed up.
Well, that's the big research on people.
Okay.
And you know, mammals and even reptiles all have melatonin. Melatonin's an ancient, you know, brain hormone that, yeah, it does exactly that. Helps you, you know, balance your day and night and adjust to the changing hours of daylight as we go through the different seasons. But it also gets really to be a problem for the wildlife when it comes to predator-prey relationships. You know, a lot of the predators, even, you know, big powerful things like grizzly bears, mountain lions, and things like that, they mostly make their attacks at night in an ambush situation. They hide in a dark place and they wait for the deer or the elk to come to them. And if there aren't good dark places to hide, those animals go hungry.
Wow.
And at the same time, the prey, you know, if we're talking about the deer and elk, well, they'll be bedded down for the night, chewing their cud for the most part, not moving around too much. But if they can't find a dark place to hide from their predators, then they're disadvantaged as well. So it's one of these things that just kind of throws the whole system out of whack.
Wow. And, you know, even as kind of green and conscientious of wildlife as we may be, that's not something I would really have thought of. Honestly?
No, it's something we're only beginning to study scientifically. You know, a lot of us have sort of felt that something was just not right here. You know, if you think of an animal being nocturnal and we're impacting its habitat, its nocturnal habitat, then there's got to be some detrimental effects. And we're just beginning to understand it. The famous one is with the sea turtles.
Right.
A lot of people have heard about this one, but you know, basically what happens there is you've got several different species of sea turtles. The mom turtles haul up on the beach, lay their eggs deep in the sand. A few weeks later, the little eggs hatch, the little turtles make their way up to the surface, and it's the light of the full moon that draws them to the ocean to safety. But unfortunately, in a lot of our good turtle beaches, we humans also want to live there at least maybe for a week or two a year in condominiums, and so we've got the nightclub lights and the condominiums, and the turtles go the wrong way. The brightness of our light pollution steers them away from the safety of the ocean, puts them up on city streets and other places where they have no chance of survival.
Aw, little turtles. Yet we did mention that, you know, Jessica Arenello, when we asked her, because I guess you had already done your piece with her for what you can do. And she talked about that, and she talked about how people would get involved in volunteering to help turn the little guys around.
Yeah. Yeah, in some places, I mean, there are, you know, towns and cities that have set some good ordinances that say, you know, for the 2-3 nights, sometimes as much as a week that the turtles are hatching, turn your lights down. You know, not turn your lights off, but just turn them down, because all you need to accomplish is that no one section of the sky the same size as the full moon is brighter than the full moon.
Okay.
You know, if you don't outshine the full moon, the turtles still go the right way. And so some places are pretty cool about it. You know, they have come as your favorite sea turtle night at the nightclubs and stuff like that. And it'd be make a celebration of it. But other places, it really is just big-hearted volunteers that are running up and down the beaches, grabbing the little buggers and putting them in the ocean.
So my question is about the deeper wildlife, like in Bryce Canyon, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have too much light. How is light encroaching from nearby, you know, houses or whatever? Is it really encroaching into the deep wilderness?
Not in places like Bryce. You know, we have a neat situation here in the state of Utah. The three darkest places that our group of dark rangers have ever scientifically measured, and we've been all over North America. The two darkest places we've measured, three darkest places, are all in Utah. Bryce being number three. So, you know, for any astronomers listening, come visit us. It doesn't get any better than this unless you're on the International Space Station or something like that. So yes, we're not in as much of a situation as other places, but because we've got an active astronomy program, you know, we have about 37,000 people that come to our astronomy programs each year. We're trying to spread the word so that our other parks like Yellowstone, Yosemite, places that do have a lot of urban encroachment, they won't have as hard a job selling this concern to the American public and the international visitors as something we need to add to our ever-growing list of let's live more gently on the planet with our animal sisters and brothers.
Right, coexist. And then I think I understood that there was an issue with birds in urban settings where high-rise buildings may have lights on.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, as I stand out, that's exactly right. I'm looking out, I guess I'm about 7 floors up here in Vegas, and the lights are just about to come on. And fortunately, Vegas is not over a major migratory bird corridor, but what happens is these office buildings, these skyscrapers, create a huge amount of migratory bird mortality, a lot of deaths. There's a neat organization called FLAP, F-L-A-P, and I apologize if there's any FLAP members listening. I can't remember what it stands for, but they're based out of Toronto. They have a fantastic website, and they're all about explaining what happens to these migratory birds. The idea is that, you know, when you're exhausted as a bird, having flown hundreds of miles, thousands of miles, and a lot of the migratory birds fly at night, harder for hawks and eagles and falcons to attack them at night, and so they do that to avoid the predators, but they're in an exhausted state, and they see the lights of a building. The only thing in their natural world that reminds them of what a skyscraper is they seem to mistake it for a gigantic tree,
right,
with moonlight shining between the branches. If you could imagine a tree in the distance, you know, the effect of an office,
yep,
building lit up at night might be the same. And that's their best guess as to why there's so many bird impacts on these skyscrapers.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, we're just messing up the natural world.
I don't want to get too down.
I mean, it's easy for me to go real negative, but it's one of those things that we think is a total win-win situation. It's like, hey, you know, when nobody's in the office building, 2 o'clock in the morning, turn the lights off.
Well, it makes sense for so many reasons, right? Reduce your energy,
reduce
the light pollution, save some birds. Come on, people.
Yeah, I'm always saying, you know, hey, if I was a big CEO and I had enough money in my corporation to own an entire building and I was answering to a bunch of shareholders about profit margins, I wouldn't be leaving the lights on all night long.
Yeah, you know?
I'd be thinking about saving some money. And even if you didn't care about the birds, but of course, being a park ranger, I care about the birds.
Well, I just know for myself that I think I live in a pretty quiet, you know,
In your neighborhood, everybody shines the light on their own house.
I know.
Look what I have.
But even when I lived in the Berkshires, and it was a little bit more rural, I still did not have a full night sky, and I didn't know that, and I don't recognize that until I go to Maine or go to Bryce Canyon, which I've never been, but I've been out to other canyons out there.
Sure.
And but you know, when I go, and then I look up, and I am just stunned.
It's amazing, isn't
by
it?
The stars that I do not see. Because of the neon glow of my suburban life.
Well, even out here, we're 90 miles from New York City, but it lights up the sky. The horizon is lit up.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. What Scott's talking about, we call light domes, and we've been able to measure with our equipment. The light dome of Las Vegas extends 270 miles.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And you think about the curvature of the Earth. I mean, the curvature of the Earth at sea level, right, is 12 miles. That's as far as you can see. So for a dome to be visible from 270 miles away, it has to be super tall. You know, we're talking 50, 60,000 feet into the sky.
Makes you want to go kick the plug out.
Yeah, it does. It's like, where's the one plug that gets it all? But, you know, one of the things that any time I get an audience to talk to, I'm forever reminding people, is that about 40% of all of our light pollution in the United States is actually residential lighting.
Yeah.
You know, so this really is one of these deals where, you know, if we band together as the little guy and the small gal, we can do a lot of good. And you know, maybe we can bring industry and city planners and homeowners associations, et cetera, along with us. It's one of the solutions from my standpoint that really seems where the grassroots movement, the individual concern, is a good way to get the solution.
Well,
started.
And thank you for focusing on the solution, because we really try to do that here. And I'm thinking to myself, we turn out every light in our house, and we used to have, but we had to, they broke. But those sensor lights outside,
the motion sensors,
just a security issue, I guess. You know,
Yeah, exactly. Hey, I totally understand it. I'm forever telling people. You know, people say to me, "Okay, Dark Ranger boy, you live out in the sticks. You don't have to worry about, you know, burglars and muggers and teenagers frolicking on your lawn and whatever else."
Frolicking.
Is that what they call it?
I think so. A technical term. But they say, "Why I need my security lights?" And I'm saying, "Yeah, get those motion sensor lights." And you know, the technology is really good. A lot of people, they probably got interested at 5, 10 years ago, and the stupid lights would come on every time a tree branch would blow in the wind, but. But now it's quite good. You know, you can go down to your big box department store and get motion sensor lights where you can adjust it for four-legged creatures or even two-legged creatures.
Wow.
So, you know, if the neighbor's annoying house cat's wandering across your lawn, doesn't trip your lights on. But if some bipedal human walks onto your property, bam, all the lights come on.
Well, Kevin, a lot of what you've listed on your site is the fact that a lot of the problem is that lights today are 360. They're shining up into space where they're not necessary in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a big point. You know, some people ask, well, what's the right kind of light? Well, what you want is you want a light where you can't see the light bulb. You know, when you're looking at the light, you shouldn't see the source. It should be shrouded. It should be covered enough that you can't see the bulb. Because
right.
When you see the bulb, then you're getting the glare. And glare works exactly opposite of what you want for a safe lighting. You know, it makes it so you constrict your pupils, and then you lose your depth perception, and it's a bad thing. But if you have a good shielded light, then you don't have that problem. And plus, think about the money factor. You know, how what other things in our life would we say, I don't mind if 50% of it's wasted? You know, I mean, if we drove cars where we had a hole in the gas tank and 50% of your gas would leak out onto the street, I mean, nobody would tolerate that. But, you know, the thing I talk about this being an evil, being a malignant thing, is there's just not a lot of awareness. People don't realize that most of the lights they're paying their precious tax dollars are great big sources of waste.
So there is something to be said about light conservation, just being aware of where your lights go. Use it wisely, right? You know, direct it where it needs to be, and that's all you need.
Turn it off when you go to bed.
And turn it off.
Turn it off. Motion sensors, all that stuff. You know, it's one of those. It's one of these solutions where we have the technology. And I think for the most part, when people hear these kinds of concerns and solutions at the same time, it's easy for them to realize this is something I can get behind. But the trick is just getting the word out.
Right.
And so that's
right.
Why you can tell I'm overeager to talk to anybody who will listen.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited that you called in, and thank you for doing it on short notice. But we had some changes, and your name came up on our interview last week with Jessica, and I thought, this guy's
well,
cool.
Sometime we need to talk about the impact of light pollution and human cancer. I don't know if there's enough time for day, but
Oh, no, don't scare me. But, yeah, no, that's another call, and I definitely want to have you back. So we will reschedule for early 2011, and I'm really glad you were able to call in tonight, and thank you for taking time out of your...
I think that we need to take a field trip to Bryce Canyon.
I think so.
There you go.
That's what
there
we're talking about.
You can do a live show from Bryce Canyon.
Oh,
that would be awesome.
Under the stars.
It's a little chilly right now, though, yes? No?
Yeah, the wintertime is the best possible viewing, but for normal humans, it's a little too cold. Even though we're in the southern deserts, we get minus 20 Fahrenheit, minus 30 some nights.
Yeah, okay. I'll
Jess, you want to go?
Jess is too skinny. She would freeze instantly. I, on the other hand, could last like a month. All right.
Dress up. Dress up.
Thanks so much, Ken.
Thank you.
Yep.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was pretty fascinating, actually. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's changing our way of life. It's there's so much to be, you know, that's being wasted out there. You know, LED lights will help.
I think so.
That's one of the things that we have talked about in the past. LED lights, they last forever. You know those little things in your home that, you know, that says the power is on? Those are LED lights, and they never go away.
They never go away. And
they never burn
out. Ever since we talked about it last week, I've noticed that the one in my bedroom on the,
does it wake you up at night?
Now I'm like, oh my god, my whole room is blue from this one light because it's on the, you know, the cable box and all that. So I'm like, oh, what am I going to get up? I'm so lazy, you know, because I'm falling asleep turning the clicker on off from the news or I don't. Let's be honest, I hate the news, and then when I get away with it, I just watch Jon Stewart. You know.
Well, that's not news.
Well, I think it's actually better, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, so I'll click the TV off, and then, like, you know, I'm already snoozing.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, I got to get my lazy buttocks out of bed and unplug the thing.
Well, remember our power strip.
When
in one of our shows we talked about how you can put your, you know, a group of these things on a power strip and shut it off.
I do have one that has this automatic shut-off. If something is not used for a certain amount of time, it just shuts down.
But it is amazing. I mean, you know, when you were a kid, you walked through the house, it was dark at night. But nowadays, you walk through your living room, and everything has a little power light on it.
I have gotten nuts lately about unplugging things.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't unplug... Right? The only thing I don't unplug is the refrigerator.
Well, don't do that.
And
that light goes out when you close the door, by the way.
And the cable boxes. But, like, I don't leave my cell phone charger plugged in anymore, except for the one upstairs on the strip, the smart strip that turns itself off.
Right.
Because, you know, Fireman Doug, my brother, told me that it's a fire hazard to leave those open, like, loose, plugged in. And I thought, oh, for heaven's sakes, now I got more things to obsess about.
Well, they are vampires. And, you know, we talked about
that in
our show.
I don't know if the chargers are vampires.
They are.
Are they?
Yes.
But I know that anything that has a little tiny green
even when
light,
it's not charging your phone,
really?
it's taking power.
Well, I know that anything that has a little green light on it is taking, you know.
Little.
Oh, there's that's funny. In the background, there's our intro there. I'll just fast forward to that. So, anyway, well, I just, you know, we don't have a lot of time, but I did want to talk. You know, we have some really great interviews coming up.
Yes.
Yeah, we're getting busy. We're scheduling into 2011, babe.
Yeah, well, it's so much going on.
So much going on. So next week, we will be eating turkey.
Yes, we will.
So there won't be any show. But, you know, we may just give one of our old shows for Todd to replay.
Sure.
You can always listen to us. Let me remind people that we have archives on our website, thegreendivas.com. Or you can find us in iTunes now. Isn't that exciting? Yay.
Where's the cheer crowd? We need a button. We need the
button
for the cheer.
To do the cheer crowd. Yeah, I know. Jesse, hello. Come on, people.
Well, anyway, kicked her out of her seat tonight.
When we come back on December 2nd.
Yeah, we got John.
John Volker.
And there's so much to talk about.
Have you now? See, he's my friend on Facebook now. And this guy has been all over Europe, and he's like on television every other day. He's such a busy guy, and we're really grateful he's going to spend some time on the phone with us, getting us updated on the Leaf and the Volt and anything else that's happening, because he's the green car guy.
Right.
Then we have Leslie Carrier on December 9th, and she was our organic, gluten-free, sustainable food gal, author, several cookbooks, who's going to talk to us about all these things in the holidays. And while we're on the topic of food, Chef Michelle Nashan, who's one of my favorite sustainable food advocates, he's going to be on in January 2011. He's a busy guy, so we got pretty lucky.
Why doesn't he come here and prepare a little something?
Oh, God. You know. Really? Because there's no sink here. There's no stove.
Yeah, there's a hose
there's
outside.
There's a little tiny refrigerator over there with hot sauce in it. Hot sauce. That's all that's in this refrigerator.
Put hot sauce on everything.
They drank
anyway.
The beer and left the hot sauce. And then we also are going to have Andy Keller, who's the CEO and founder of Chico Bags. He's been kind of on a tour, calling himself Bag Monster, talking about, you know, the evils of these plastic one-use bags. And, of course, Chico Bags is a reusable bag. They're actually pretty clever because a lot of them, you know, kind of fold into these little pouches. They're very guy-friendly. Wayne likes them because it's a little pouch. You know, he doesn't have to carry in a bag until he puts his groceries in it. But he obviously wants to talk a little bit about this lead-in-the-bag issue.
Right. The Chinese processed
recycled bag.
They aren't so green as they claim to be.
Well, you know, it's probable. I would say that some of these manufacturers didn't know that the lead was being used in the mix.
Well, I think it's more like that
problem.
Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon of being renewable, recyclable,
I know,
and
I
sustainable.
I try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt, but there are some greenwashers out there. Just do it cheap, do it, you know, dirty cheap and get it done, and who cares if there's lead? But
I do.
Yeah, right, but we do, especially when you're tossing your greens in there, because I try not to use any bags. Oh, my
you
God.
Just carry it.
I've just
put it in your pockets.
I put it in the bag. I'll put my greens and whatever. And I'm blathering on, and we have burned up an hour, babe.
Yeah, well.
So that's it for us. Please visit the website, thegreendivas.com. Find us on Facebook, Green Divas Radio, to keep updated. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We're grateful that you're listening. And, you know, that's all I got.
Yeah, try and keep up.
Have a great green week.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Hour. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and don't forget to visit thegreendivas.com.